Hello, this is Deborah Anderson, the Black Woman Animator, coming back to you with another video. And in this video, I have Goro Fujita. Welcome.
Hey, Deborah. How's it going?
Good. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. So my name is Goro Fujita. I'm an art director and animator. I started my career working more like an animator first, and then I transitioned to VizDev, visual development, art director, and now I kind of create VR prototypes. We can get into it later. But yeah, that's what I do, and that's who I am.
Nice. So you were born in Japan and grew up in Hamburg, Germany. So can you talk about growing up as a kid?
You know about me.
that's
good. Yeah, that's good. So I was born in Japan, but moved with my family to Germany when I was 2.5 years old. And so I didn't really live in Japan. So I grew up bilingual. German is better than my Japanese, actually, I have to admit. But spoke with my parents Japanese and went to German high school and German elementary in high school. My family is like a super musical family. Like my dad was a horn player in the Hamburg Symphonic Orchestra, which is why he also moved to Germany. And my brother was like super talented in music always, right? So I got dragged into that early on, where I was learning piano and stuff like that, and trumpet. I played the trumpet.
Trumpet players.
Yeah, but my brother was always kind of, he's 4 years older, and I have only one brother, and he kind of, you know, he was always better, not just a bit, but a lot better in terms of like music. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the expectations were high, but then, you know, I don't want to be, as a little brother, I didn't want to be in the shadow of my older brother, right? Mm-hmm. So I was basically trying to find something where I could be better than him. And certainly it wasn't music. I tried, you know, but he was the kind of guy, you know, who can just listen to a song. Like we watch MacGyver on TV, right? And he can play this theme song right away. Oh. He can create his own arrangement on the spot, right? And I was so jealous about that stuff, because I'm like, how do you do this, right? And it sounds just like it, you know, but it doesn't sound like a cheap version of it. It sounds right, like a real song. So I said, yeah, I'm not going to catch up to this guy. So I started drawing a lot. So I drew all my life. And, you know, like also in elementary school, I was always the creative guy, right? Mm-hmm. And not paying attention. My grades were super bad, right? Because I would just draw all day. And, you know, but my brother was really good at that too, which kind of sucked, right? So I didn't like that. But you know, at least there was some hope. Like, he was 4 years ahead, but it wasn't as, like, hopeless as with music, you know? So I kept doing music on the side, but my passion grew towards animation. So drawing first, not animation. But early on, I realized that I do want to do something as a career in graphic design or something like that. So when you look at those, I don't know if you guys had that here in the States, but in Germany we had this thing called Poesie Album, which is like a little kind of diary type of book that you pass along to your classmates, and they can write something nice about you or something. You know, I don't know how to call it here in the States. Yeah, kind of, but it's more personal, you know. Okay. Like, not everybody has it, you know, and it's like a personal album. Mm-hmm. And there's also some templates where, like, who do you want to be, what's your favorite musician and stuff like that. And I always wrote graphic designer, mm-hmm. not knowing what that really means, but I thought that sounds really cool, right? So I want to be a graphic designer. Yeah. And later in high school, I kept drawing and stuff. And then I started feeling like, hey, there's something else that's like also animation. I like to make things move, right? Yeah. And so all my class books, they had, like, I used the flip books, the edge of the book, mm-hmm. to draw some like wrestling matches or stick figures, you know. And then at the end of the year, when we had to return the books, I had to like erase them all one by one.
Oh, it's good that you did it in pencil.
Yeah. But you see the shadow, right? So I got like in trouble with that, but I really loved that stuff, like animation and stuff. And then senior year of high school, I first got in touch with 3D, and that was kind of like, kind of talking about my career. I should be talking more about my childhood, right?
No, oh, is that keep going.
Okay, cool. Because it's gonna be long, but so maybe I talk a little bit about also the environment I grew up in, because I was in a German school, and my brother actually had it pretty hard because he moved to Germany when he was 6. Mm-hmm. So he was fluent in Japanese but couldn't speak a word German. Mm. So when he got into class, he could actually not understand anything. So my mom used to go with him into class, and my mom couldn't speak German. So she actually learned German through elementary school and TV. Pretty impressive, right?
Yeah.
But by the time I went to elementary school, like I was 2.5 when I was in Germany, right? And then, so by the time I was ready to go to elementary school, I was actually fluent in German. Mm-hmm. So I had it much easier than my brother because he kind of paved the way.
Yeah.
But Germany, especially Hamburg, not many people know this, but Hamburg is actually the second biggest city in Germany, mm-hmm. after Berlin. And but big meaning size of San Francisco, right? Like 1.82 million population or something. But it's a good size, right? Mm-hmm. But back then, you know, there was still the Berlin Wall as well, right? So it was not very international at all. I was the only Asian in my class, right? So that's how I grew up in, you know, so I do understand what it means to be the minority, you know, and I, of course, I experienced a fair amount of racism as well, you know, where, you know, they do like this ching ching chong, you know, yeah. Yeah. And there's the saying in German, it's called ching ching chong, Chinesen sind so dumm, and that means that ching ching chong, Chinese are so dumb, it's stupid, right?
Yeah.
But that stuff sticks with you, right?
Yeah.
Like you're so young and you don't understand why people are so mean to you and why they pick on you when you look different, right?
Yeah.
And also when I played ping pong was very popular in elementary school and early high school.
Mm-hmm.
Like I go to a club, you know, to go to training, and then my first day, like everybody's like loud screaming, you know, playing, and then I enter the gym and everybody stops talking and they just stare at me, right?
Yeah.
Pretty terrifying. So that stuff, you know, like I got used to, but that was kind of the normal for me, right? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I only had a few encounters that were a little bit scary, you know, with mm-hmm. skinheads and stuff like that, but I never got into like real fights and stuff. So pretty like, I would say, like, good, normal childhood, you know,
mm-hmm.
But not, like, subconsciously knowing that I was something different, you know, I came from a different background. But I also went to the Japanese school every Saturday. So I had 6 days of school, right? 5 days German school, 1 day Japanese school. And
Asian.
Yeah. But then in the Japanese school, I was kind of an outsider too, together with the other Japanese German people, you know, because they were split into like the people that were going to German school during the week and Japanese school on weekends, and the people that only went to Japanese school.
Okay.
Right. So they could barely speak German. Right, because they went to this called international school where they had some English lessons and stuff like that, but it was like all Japanese, right?
Okay.
So they looked at us like, oh, those are the German Japanese, they can't even speak Japanese properly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was like an interesting way to grow up, right? Like where I didn't find like acceptance in Japan, but also no in Germany, right? It felt like... But I felt comfortable with it. I never felt like, oh, this is horrible or anything. I never felt like I need to get away from here or something. So it didn't really affect me in a way that it was conscious.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So back to like getting into high school, you know, that was my normal. But later in high school, it was like, you know, in the late 90s, I would say, you know, it became more and more international. So Germany, as you know, is like very foreigner friendly, so immigrant friendly, right? They let everyone in,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so it was a lot of people from Europe, right? Like less Asians, but let's say out of 90 students, we were 6 Asians by the end of high school, right? So it was like 5 Koreans and 1 Japanese, which was me. and then a lot of people from like, you know, some Dutch people, some from Finland, Scandinavia, you know, and like the surroundings, Turkey and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty mixed, you know. In senior high school, that's when Toy Story came out, 1995, right? And
mm-hmm.
I watched Toy Story and I was like Jesus Christ, this is crazy. Like, what is this, right? This is like, I've never seen something like this. And before then, I grew up watching Disney movies, right? Yeah, I watched them like on loop, right? And for example, Hercules, Tarzan, I watched like 9-12 times, you know, just because I was so fascinated with animation. And yeah, in 95, when I saw Toy Story, I was like, this is a new world. This is something crazy, right?
Yeah.
But it felt so far away. I was like super intrigued what that is. And got really interested in this, but then I didn't know where to start. I didn't know what it was, right? Like, I mean, it doesn't look hand-drawn, but what is this thing? You know, what does 3D mean? And then in 1999, this animation came out called Alien Song, created by Victor Navone, who became a Pixar animator, actually, because of that animation, right? You probably know that animation of, like, this green alien singing, I will survive, right? And, that was just, like, when I saw that, and there was also another short film that created a very big impact on me was Killer Bean from Jeff Liu, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, like, those coffee beans that are dancing, and they have the Matrix homage in there. And those are the two movies, that short films, that really paved my way into animation, because I was like, I think the reason was it looked like it was made by a single person. So it felt approachable. It felt like I felt like I could do this, you know, versus like Toy Story felt like way too crazy. It was so far away from what I knew.
Yeah.
So that's when I started researching what 3D was and started like getting really interested in like, what is this software? Like, how do I get this and stuff like that, right? So there was a few 3D magazines back then in Germany, and I would just buy them and subscribe to them and stuff, you know. Of course, not myself. I asked my mom, can I subscribe to no. And and that's how I actually got the first taste of 3D. And that's basically what basically formed this graphic designer, which I used to write in the template, into like Animator. I was like, this is something, this is it, you know. This is something I want to do for the rest of my life, right? So that's kind of like my backstory, childhood to the beginning of my professional career. Shall I keep going, or do you have questions?
I feel like your thing with your brother is kind of similar to like me playing video games, and like I have a twin brother, and
ooh, nice.
He would spend so much time on the video games, and then I would like opt in, and then, you know, the little wrestling game where he would just like pin me in a corner and beat me up, and I'm like, okay, I never want to dedicate the time to get good enough to compete with him
to so beat
I,
him.
I just will not play video games.
Yeah,
I'll go over my cousin's house and play Sonic.
Nice.
On Sega Genesis. But
that's old school. I love it.
And then I feel like what you're feeling with your brother with the music is like probably how everybody else feels with you with VR. Like, what? Like, how are you doing this? So I feel like he was like your like mentor for like excellence.
The good thing is, you know, like if I carry on with the story, like actually we come together later on where we work together, you know, on short films and stuff, which is really cool. Yes.
What would you say some of your best childhood memories are?
That's a good question. I think, you know, these days, I think it's not very common that people, you know, let the kids just walk by themselves outside at night and, you know, into the forest and stuff like that, right? Like, then people call the cops on you right away.
Yeah.
But growing up, I was like living close to the Ulster River, and that was like walking distance. And we used to go there. My parents were like pretty, you know, chill about us going anywhere, you know, and they actually forced us to walk to school alone, you know, and they're like, I show you the way one more time, so pay attention because you're going to be on your own, right? So we were very independent in that way, right?
Yeah.
I was like way more dependent on my parents than my brother, because my brother kind of like was the bigger guy. He needed to always be stronger than me. So I always preferred to tag along with him. Like when we get, like for example, in the morning, it's very common in German to eat like buns and bread with spreads and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
So we buy the bread fresh. So the bakery is like 2 miles away or something, right? So my parents say, get some bread, right? And then I'm like, I don't want to go alone. And then, you know, and I would always tag along. But basically, they let us play in the forest and stuff like that. Even by the river, we would climb trees, and it's pretty crazy, right? If you think about it now, it should be normal, you know? Yeah, it should be, but times have changed, and I'm sure on the countryside it's still like that, you know? Yeah. But these days, people are so paranoid with social media, and because there's too much information about bad situations and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think my great memories as a childhood is, you know, playing in the forest, you know, and like building some boats with always something creative, right? Building boats out of leaves and just letting them down, letting them float on the river and then chase them on land, right? And climbing over trees. There's like a fallen tree over the river, you know, and there's a memory where I almost fell in. I could barely hang on to it because I got too cocky, you know, I was hanging off it. And, you know, my brother had to save me there. That's like one of the cool memories. And then we had like these toys called Mini 4WD, so four-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. They were like very popular in Japan during the 80s, you know, and they I think they came over to the States too at some point, but mm-hmm. They were basically little kits that you built together, and you can modify the motors and stuff like that. Almost like an RC car, but it's not an RC car. You turn it on and you have to chase it, right? But you could buy like crazy motors that they go like 30 miles per hour, and it's like this little thing. So as a kid, you can't even chase it. Right. So once you turn it on, it just goes, and then it shatters in a wall or something, right? But we had tons of these. Every time. Yeah, one thing I forgot to say is every summer we would go back to Japan because our relatives were all in Japan. Mm-hmm. And that's when we buy all that stuff, right? Yeah. Because in Germany, there was like almost zero import of toys and even sweets and candy and stuff from like international stuff was not common at all, right? Mm-hmm. Now, here in the States, for example, if I go to like a Nijiya market or something, I can find everything what you can buy in Japan. Yeah. But that was not the case in the 80s, you know, and 90s. So it was always like this shopping spree. Whenever we go to Japan, you know, I grab my grandma and I'm, "Grandma, let's go," because I knew that she buys me a lot of stuff. Yeah. And that's when we came back with a lot of toys, you know. Mm-hmm. We also had the soft air guns, you know, like with the BB guns and stuff like that. Then my brother was like hardcore into, you know, and those like didn't exist in Germany, right?
Right.
So, so we would modify these cars and take them into the forest, you know, and do some photo shoots of like, create like stories, like almost like Mad Max, you know, like how the cars are driving. And we create these explosions, literally with like, what do you call these firecrackers? So we would break them and get that gunpowder out, right? Mm-hmm. So dangerous. And we would like collect all of them and put them in the. Do you remember the camera film capsules?
Yeah.
That, right? Mm-hmm. So we would put the gunpowder in there to have a lot, right? And then we would pour it on top of branches and stuff, and we just light it on fire and we take photos, you know? And then it looks like the cars are driving through explosions. And when I think about it, you know, like, my parents didn't know, you know? But it's so, it's crazy stuff like
as
that,
long as
right?
you came back with all your fingers.
Exactly. Actually, I lost one finger. That's a different story, though. We can come to that later. Not in the childhood. This was actually 2017, so much more recent. But I think that was really cool. We had our neighbors who are childhood friends we're still in touch with, like sister and brother. And they're kind of like, I almost consider them my siblings, you know. She's 1 year younger. Her brother was 1 year older than my brother. So we were like, we called the gang called PRCG, you know? So it was like Patrick, Ryosuke, my brother, Christine, and Goro, right?
Yeah.
PRCG. And we created those IDs and stuff like that.
Nice.
You know? And then I still have the photo ID. It's like a photo and it has like characteristics.
I mean, that's what childhood was about.
Yeah. And then one of the favorite games we used to play is Fall Guy, right? So Fall Guy was one of the series from America that made it overseas, you know? Of course, Knight Rider and MacGyver as well, but Fall Guy was like one of the early ones. And I don't know if you remember Fall Guy, but it's about, so it's like stuntmen, right? So it's a series about stuntmen, and it's kind of like this cheesy story always, right? And there's like a female and two guys, Howie and Cody, you know?
Yeah.
And Jody is the female. So we loved stunts. That was so cool. So we had a big garden, so we used to like jump off trees and stuff, pretending, you know, one is Colt, one is Howie, you know, and not Cody. Yeah, it was Colt and Howie. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
No, Cody is a different series. But then, so we were four, right? PRCG. So of course, the oldest, Patrick, he wanted to be Colt, who is the main guy, right? My brother was obviously Howie, and of course Christine was Jody. So who am I, right? So they made a name up called Mick. So you're Mick. Yeah, I was like this fourth wheel. You know? And I was like, but I want to be Colt. Yeah? So sometimes, you know, we had role changes where one person could be Colt and he was the leader and stuff. And, you know,
sharing
we used to
caring.
Yeah, and we used to like, you know, there was like this wooden fence, so we would like stand on top, and then one guy rides with a like tricycle underneath the fence, and then we would jump over and think that's a cool stunt, you know. And then always we take photos, right?
Yeah.
Like there was like always that about like getting really good shots, you know, and pretending we're like the superheroes there. So I think that was probably the most valuable thing that I really cherish about our childhood, that we grew up in a really good environment, and
mm-hmm.
they are actually also French German, so they were like very open, you know, open-minded
mm-hmm.
people. Our other neighbors on the other side, we were in a town home with two adjacent
mm-hmm.
homes. We were in the center, and the other family was Turkish, and
mm-hmm.
so it was like a very international, you know, environment. So it was like it felt really comfortable, and yeah, it's crazy to think that Christine has now two kids or three kids, I think. It's pretty crazy, yeah.
It's interesting to listen to you talk about your childhood and see how, like, oh, you were, like, working on composition and, like, visual, like, special
effects.
And, like, it was, like, so much, it just was, like, innately, like, you were, like, destined to be, like, a filmmaker.
Yeah, kind of when I think back, you know, yeah, we always wanted to create stories, and then...
Mm-hmm.
Now you remind me that another fun memory I had is like we got, my dad was kind of, he's not a tech guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he also was interested in creation. He's a creative, right? Because he's in music.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually had a Super 8 camera before I was born. So he would just film with it. And I found the film rolls later on and I actually digitized them. It's amazing, like his skill of composition and how he recorded stuff.
Yeah.
Like without even seeing a screen, right? It's just like it rolls with a gun, right? and you just hear this rattling, but you can't really, well, you can see through the visor, but that's about it, right?
Yeah.
But beautiful shots, and so he was interested in capturing life, right? So he always had a nice camera. He was a Nikon guy, right? So I was Nikon for a while until I switched to Sony, because Sony is better in video, right? And videography and stuff. But yeah, so he basically definitely got me interested in photography and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then early on, so we kind of leapfrogged VHS. So we did have VHS videos and stuff, of course, tons of them. And
mm-hmm.
we had a player, but we didn't have a VHS recorder because they were like huge,
yeah.
right? Because of the tapes. But we got one of the first Hi8 cameras, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which was like the smaller, almost like cassette tapes, you know, that size. And then my brother and I went berserk on that stuff, right? And that's when we first started stop motion, actually. So we did some, you know, stop motion with like, what is it called here? The Kinder Surprise, the egg, the chocolate. Is it Kinder Surprise or something like that? Kinder...
I'm not sure what it's called in the States, but
yeah,
I'm sure people know what you're talking about.
yeah. So I think it was illegal for a while here, right? I don't know why. I think it was because it's too many small pieces or something, right?
It was like stars or something?
Well, there's always like a surprise capsule in there with like model kits or figurines.
Yeah.
And in Germany, there was like this huge thing, right? Like there was like always this treat for kids because you can shake it and hear kind of... if it's a figurine or a model kit, you know, and
mm-hmm.
everybody wanted always the figurines. So you see, like, in the supermarkets, people shaking it. And you think, no, not this one. maybe this one, right? And that's something, I collected these as a kid, these figurines, and then we were like, hey, I remember they had like this crocodile-themed, figurines that would do breakdance and stuff like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So you see one crocodile in a backspin position. So we would just rotate it, you know? And the way we did stop motion back then is you just hit record and stop. Beep, 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 right? So mm-hmm. we put the camera on a tripod and then we would just click, click, and then I would animate and my brother's like, tick, tick, okay, next. Tick, tick, click, and then we watched it and we were like, oh, this is amazing, right? And of course also with Lego, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and thinking about it early on, I was actually really, like, yeah, I never realized that actually until now that I was actually animating much sooner than, you know, I thought, right? So those are like the first childhood memories where that really paved the way to who I am today, I think.
I saw some pictures of you. Did you break dance?
Yes. So, I have a lot of different passions. You know, my brother was into combat. Like, he really loved martial arts. So we watched Jackie Chan movies, like, you know, back and forth all the time. Mm-hmm. But then combat was something, you know, I wanted to be able to do, but then I didn't want to really practice. And my brother went to training and stuff like that. He learned Eskrima and Nunchucks and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And he brought it home and he would just practice it on me and I'm like super weak, right? So I was always saying like, hey, one day when I'm taller and stronger than you, I'm going to mess you up, right? So that was always the thing. But then when I got taller and stronger, I was rationally two adults, so I'm like, oh, whatever, man, forget about it. But so I was interested in combat because that's what my brother was like super into. But then I really started watching like Michael Jackson and stuff like that, right? And I remember like when I saw Michael Jackson, I think it's like the Jam tour. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I was just in awe. It's like this guy is insane, right? Like, I want to be able to dance like that. So I remember like trying to learn the moves from Michael, you know, and we had like this crappy VHS recording from a concert that we recorded from TV. And my parents didn't have cable, right? It was all antenna. So the channels were horrible. They had like this crazy interference, you know? So we had the recording of that. And then we had like this advanced VHS player with the jog shuttle, so I can just change the speed. So I actually learned the sideways moonwalk. I don't know what the name of it when you slide sideways. That move I copied from Michael Jackson, you know. Uh-huh. And I can still do it. Never mind, it's like once you figure it out, you're good. You're good, right? You know how to do it. But then I was like, this is really cool. You know, I want to learn how to pop and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. But YouTube wasn't a thing back then. So I was just like, Michael Jackson is all I had, you know. So, and then I think in the late 90s, we got internet, right? Mm-hmm. So we were like one of the first, I would say like one of the few people that had internet in the late 90s in my friend circle, right?
Yeah.
It was like the 28,000 baud modem, really slow, right? But, and we had AOL.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, you know, like in Germany, you actually pay landline by minute. Or mm-hmm. I don't know how it is now. And now everybody has cell phones. But back then it was like you actually pay by minute, even if it's local calls, right?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. And yeah, that was the thing, right? and then you pay minutes for AOL as well. So if you add that up, it was like $6 per hour, which is very expensive, right?
Yeah.
So they had, and it was like about $1 for the phone line and then I think $5 for the internet, right? And so back then AOL had those promotions, 50 hours free, right? So basically you only had to pay the phone line. But what they did is, you know, there's computer magazines that you can get in the store, they had like the CD-ROM on there, right? And they had a code on there, mm-hmm. which you can use, a registration code that you can use to get the 50 hours free. Mm-hmm. And so I got one of those magazines and I used the 50 hours really quickly, you know, because I loved the internet, you know. Back then we had CompuServe and AOL, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember like after the, like, I was like, I can't keep buying these magazines. That's not scalable.
Right.
So, man, I just went into the kiosk and write down the registration codes, and I would just use them at home. Oh. Totally messed up, you know, but that's how I got cheap internet, you know.
Yeah.
But then I was regulated by my parents because still the phone bill went up, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, really, like, you know, surfing the internet. I created my own website early on, you know. So
nice.
That was like way before YouTube. And then, but then I don't know if you remember this service called Napster.
Yep.
So Napster became popular. And that's also how I actually got Alien Song in 99.
Oh,
right? Because
nice.
There was no YouTube, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I was able to find it, and Killer Bean and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking for more content like that, but it didn't exist. It was Jeff Liu and Victor Navon, period. Those were the guys, you know, and everything else looked like crap, you know. And there was a few tutorials online. There was this modeling tutorial of this gnome in NURBS in 3D Studio Max. That was like a very popular one, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then for me, it was like, how do I, what was actually the question? Because I completely breakdance. Okay. Yeah. let's bring it back. Yeah. So, that's when I also started finding like super low quality dance videos, right? And from the Flying Steps, the Germans, right? The Germans were really good, right?
Yeah.
So with B-Boy Storm, and so they paved the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried to learn the six step and stuff like that, you know, but I didn't know any technique.
Yeah.
And so basically, I kind of like tried to practice, but I never took it seriously. And in Germany, there was no, not that I knew of, like breakdance schools. Like what's popular in Germany is in senior high school or middle school or something, probably senior high school, everybody takes ballroom dancing classes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very common thing to do. So that's like, everybody does it, right? So you sign up and then you go, and that's where you meet the girls and stuff like that. You know, girls meet the guys there. So I know how to ballroom dance for that. So I took like, the novice class and the advanced class, you know, and then you can go to silver, gold, and platinum, but I only did the advanced one.
Yeah.
So I learned like how to dance cha-cha, rumba, tango, and stuff like that, and waltz, right? But then, you know, they had some parties every now and then. So that dance school, right? Because the dance school goes for like 3 months or something, you know, once every week. And they would do parties, and that's like before you can go to a disco club, right?
Yeah.
So, because we're like still 16 or 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a guy who was like basically doing his like body waves and stuff. And I'm like, whoa, this is awesome, right? And then I started practicing it too. And I also saw a video about the windmill, how to do a windmill, you know. But it wasn't a real tutorial. So I was just trying to like swing my legs around, you know, super bad technique. And just got bruised and stuff like that. It never worked. But then, fast forward a few years later, YouTube came out, right?
Yeah.
And then there was a guy called Invent FMC. He lives in LA now, actually. And Asad Invent Conley. And he basically, I watched a video of him, and he shows how to pop, like how to create hits, you know, by clinching the fists and stuff like that. And basically he shows off like his hits, you know, like how he does the popping. And I'm like, this is really good instruction, right? So I got a little bit more towards popping now, you know, and animation and stuff where you do these type of frame by frame movements. And so I loved and stuff. So I got into popping and really trained that. And then fast forward a few years later, I came to the States, right, in 2008. And that's kind of like my dance segue right now, maybe, because that's a really good story too, by the way. So I came to the States, you know, and then we went to this thing called Sketch Crawl, you might be familiar with. Enrico Casarosa started that from Pixar a long time ago. And basically the idea is like people, concept artists, animators, they meet in a public location, and then you sketch for a day, and then you come back, regroup, and you show each other your sketches. So it's like this community event, right? So I started going to those in the States. First year I came here in 2008, and then we see a guy who's like with a sketchbook, you know, but he's waiting for his coffee, and he's like doing these crazy moves like while he's standing in line, right? And my friend Erwin Madrid, who's an amazing artist as well, he was like, I think I know this guy. I think this is Joe. Like, he was always into dance, and he was at the Academy of Art University with me. You know? Uh-huh. And I'm like, let me talk to this guy. And then he said, oh, Irvin! You know, so he said, yeah, this is Goro, my friend, and stuff. And like, what do you do? And he said, oh, yeah, I dance, and blah, blah, blah. You know, and I'm like, you dance? And then we talked about this, and he showed me, like, those crazy moves. Yeah. Like the Ewok. Do you know the Ewok?
So, I probably could, if I saw it.
Yeah, so basically, apparently the origin of the Ewok is because of the Star Wars Ewoks. Mm-hmm. When they walk over the tree, it looks really weird. Like, because it was like, I think they were on wires or something like that.
Yeah.
And then it's like a step where you do the oh, feet, yeah. where you shuffle the feet like this, right? Mm-hmm. And it looks like you're gliding above. And then your arms are like out and your legs go crazy, you know? And mm-hmm. basically he showed me that and I'm like, this is insane. You're like so good. And I was like, can you break dance too? And he's like, yeah, I did that, but I'm more into turf dancing, right? Okay. So that's like his thing. And he grew up in Richmond. So he was like the only Asian among black people and stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and he's like, I'm trying to keep the kids off the streets. So I'm teaching dance. And I was like, that's super inspiring, right? Mm-hmm. So he said, hey, you know, you guys want to come to a party tonight? You know, there's at the Minna Gallery in San Francisco, there's like a cool party. There's a lot of cool dancers coming tonight, you know? And I'm like, yes, let's do it, right? And then we finish sketch crawl and then we go to the Mission District and then go to the Minna Gallery. It's like an art gallery, but they change it into like a club sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. a bit sketchy area, you know, but that's standard, right?
Right.
And then there's this guy dancing outside, you know, doing some popping, you know, and I'm like, oh, that's my friend, Assad, right? And I'm like, oh, cool. I walk up to him, you know, and he's like, hey, cool. So where are you from? And I'm like, I just moved from Germany, actually, right? Just like in August and found a job here and, you know, enjoying my life here. And he's like, oh, that's cool. Like, and then he switches to German, right? So he's a black guy in San Francisco. Random dance guy that I met starts speaking German, and he's like, my grandma taught me German, so I actually know German. And I'm just like, I was like so perplexed, and I couldn't actually speak German. I kept speaking English to him because my brain was like, this doesn't, what is going on, right? And I'm like, I kept saying like, where did you learn? And yeah, my grandma taught me, and you know, I never actually lived in Germany and blah. And I'm just like, what is going on, right? Like, it's super confused. And then anyway, I was like, this is awesome, you know? And then he's like, do you dance? And I'm like, I like dance. I wouldn't say I can dance, right? And he said, yeah, we're gonna have fun. So we go in there. It's a lot of people from the dance community that mm-hmm. I wasn't in yet, right? And then they create like those circles, and it's like legit stuff, you know? It's not just like drunk people dancing. And right. I'm just like, oh, this is they're good, you know? And then Assad is like, Goro, come into the circle. I'm like, no. He's like, come in, you're fine, right? And then I was like, okay, who cares? I go in and do something, robot, and I left, you know? And he's like, dude, that was okay, right? It's about having fun.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody cares. And I was just like drenched in sweat because I was nervous, not because I was exercising, you know, but that was kind of the first time it exposed me to, like, you know, dance here in the States, right?
Yeah.
And I really loved the community. They was like super nice to me, you know, and then at the end of the night he was just like, yeah, check out my YouTube channel, InEvent FMC, you know. And then I'm like, oh, okay, go home, and first thing I do is YouTube channel, and guess what, it's the video I learned from.
Oh,
right, that's crazy, right? So it was that guy that taught me how to pop. So I texted him right away, dude, Assad, I can't believe this. I learned from you in Germany like years ago, like 2 years ago, and now I actually, what are the odds that I meet you in person, right? So he actually became my teacher later, because I went to a dance studio to mm-hmm. properly learn how to break dance, and mm-hmm. I learned from Miles Kennedy. He's like he was with a Renegade Rockers crew, and mm-hmm. I think he's now in the fashion business. He doesn't dance anymore, but super good teacher. So I learned from him, and I also learned sometimes cricket. She's Michelle Cricket. She's she brought breakdance for female up here in the Bay Area. You know, mm-hmm. so she founded the Sisters of the Underground, the crew. You know, and so yeah. basically. I learned from her too, and like Miles and Cricket, they would battle together as a, you know, as a group to, with others and stuff. I was always in awe to see them battle. I never went to official battles because I never got good enough, you know. Mm-hmm. But and I was also a little bit old to start with. I started to be more serious about it when I was 28, 29, right? So
yeah.
You need like serious muscles to do breakdance. So yeah, so when I went to City Dance in San Francisco, I was like basically learning how to break dance from Miles. But then Erwin, my artist friend, he was also interested in dance, but he didn't want to do break dance. He wanted like popping.
Yeah.
So we also started taking popping classes together. So I would go twice a week from San Mateo to San Francisco, which is like 45 minutes drive, you know, after work we would go, you know, to dance and stuff. And then guess what? Assad becomes a teacher there for popping, you know? So first it was the different guy, what's his name? Boy Wonder from Soul Sector, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, you know these names from like America's Best Dance Crew and stuff like that. And seeing them like actually teach, it's pretty amazing, right? So and Boy Wonder was like really talented, and we learned from him like for about a year, but then he quit teaching, and then Assad became a teacher. So I'm actually learning from Assad, which was like crazy. And then I ended up creating his promo video, shooting and editing it for his website later on, right? So it all came full circle, you know. And then while I was learning from Miles, that's when I learned how to do the windmill. I was able to do it, you know. I tried to learn the flare, but then that put too much pressure on my wrist and I didn't want to risk it, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got to a point where I could dance in a circle in the club, you know, but power moves is basically windmill was the only one that I only thing that I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And even one of the entry problems, right? But mm-hmm. it's still so hard. It took me like 1 year to learn. And but that was like around that time I was in my best fitness, absolutely, right? Right? Because I would like practice every day in the morning at the DreamWorks gym, actually, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then at night I would go practice with them, right? So that's when I met a lot of like other dancers, you know, like famous guy Iron Monkey, right? Like mm-hmm. he probably doesn't remember me anymore, but I would like basically dance with in the same gym with them, you know. So that was really cool. And I actually also met Le Twins, right? So
Le Twins, oh,
yeah,
nice.
So because Sandy, who owned City Dance,
mm-hmm.
she had a good good connection with the Twins, right? So she conducted workshops. They would come from France to conduct workshops, like 2-day workshops, and I actually took a workshop with them way before they became famous with World of Dance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have a picture with them where they're like next to me. They're super tall and intimidating, and also they're always in character. That's I say in character, but that's probably who they are. But they're kind of intimidating because they're like always like so intense, you know.
Yeah.
And then when we do the dance class, they split our groups into two. One is like one twin, the other twin, right? And then they battle each other. My group is better and stuff like that. It's like a show, right? And I was just like amazed by it. There's still a YouTube video of that class where you see me like clumsily dancing in the background, you know, because I was like kind of in the middle, but then I slowly moved to the back because all the kids picked up all the moves so fast, the choreography, you know, and I'm just like, oh, what do I do? It's too fast. And I looked super stiff. So
yeah, picking up choreography is like a skill in itself. Like, I don't know, I'm not a natural dancer. I'm very like, okay, where does my elbow go? Okay, where, mm-hmm. It takes me longer to pick up steps.
Yeah, I noticed that freestyle is something that I could do better than, like, picking up steps and doing it in a specific order. It's really difficult, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I snapped a picture, I have it, you know, and I'm like, well, that was before, they were already internet famous, but they're not millionaires, you know, now they won World of Dance 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Pretty amazing, right? So that's kind of my dance story, you know.
Yeah,
you never know, right? Because everybody starts somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And then there's this breakthrough moment, and the Twins, I mean, it was only a matter of time. I mean, those guys are like insane, right? I mean, they live on a different planet in terms of dance, like, because they also do it, and you can probably relate because you have a twin, but they you know, like the way they communicate, they know each other so well. So when they battle, the guy in the background, the other twin, is also like doing stuff that adds to the storytelling of the brother, right? It's right. like unbelievable. So, yeah, I was like glad that I was able to meet them, and yeah, they look tall, but they're actually tall. You know, they're like good, like half a foot taller. And, you know, yeah, it's crazy. So when they come in to the dance studio, you knew, oh, royalty is in here. So yeah, so that's kind of my dance story. I did combat later on. So mm-hmm. when I was at DreamWorks, I started Kung Fu for 6 months, but then I really noticed it's just not for me, and I kept just like, my heart was in dance because music makes me move, right?
So I want to ask you about that because our mutual friend Andre Rodriguez, yes. he mentioned that, like, what is your philosophy around learning stuff? Because he was talking about how you did martial arts and you did it really good, well, and then you just like stopped, and you're like, even your teachers were like, what, why are you stopping? So what is your idea with like learning and then letting go?
Oh, I love that question. So so people talk about talent, right? And a lot of people say like, oh, Gordon, you're so talented, you know, you have like this God-given skill. And I'm like, no, I don't. I'm just like a maniac in learning. So like when basically my mom used to tell me like, you know, we're not a very talented family. I don't know why she always said that, but she was like, hey, we're not very naturally talented, but uh-huh. what I see in you is your talent lies in persistency, that you stick to something and you persevere until you get to what you want, mm-hmm. right? And that's what I consider is your secret power, that you do not let go until you get what you want, right? Mm-hmm. So, and she was really right about that. I mean, I don't let go until I get to a certain level. And if I don't like something, I drop it, right? Because it feels like it's useless to put time into that. And the first time I experienced that was music. I really tried, right? I played piano, and I played average, right? I played trumpet, but I saw my brother, and he was like so far ahead that I was like, I can't dedicate my life to this so much, like my brother does, because my brother would practice like 4 hours a day, you know, just because he wanted to.
Yeah.
And I had to force myself to practice. So I knew that there's a disconnect there. If I have to force myself to practice, then I don't like the process. If I don't like the process, I don't like to play. Yeah. What I want is I want the skill for free, but that's just, you know, wishful thinking. That doesn't happen, right?
Yeah.
So the same happened with Kung Fu, because I was like, I want to be able to do backflips and those kicks and, you know, and like, I want to be able to defend myself. I want to do all the, you know, Kung Fu moves and, you know, how to use the bow and stuff like that. I want to learn all that, you know. But then I realized I only wanted it for free. Because mm-hmm. once I started practicing, you know, the first month was okay. You know, like my shifu put me in the corner and he said, do this move like over and over again, right? Yeah. So classic, right? Yeah. So I'm like in the back of the class. I'm not even like allowed in the gym. I'm outside at the patio and I'm just like practicing. He's like, good, okay, next one. And you come into class, and then basically he taught me stretches and also, you know, Kung Fu basics, right?
Yeah.
But then we enter month two, and then I'm working, and then I'm like, okay, I have class tonight, and I'm like, do I want to go? And that's when it starts, right? Because mm-hmm. if you love something, it shouldn't be a question. You just go. And I used to go to breakdance knowing it's in San Francisco, right? But this was in Belmont, so it's like a 15-minute drive. It's very close, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just like, and then that got worse. Every week it's like, yeah, but I'm paying for it, so I don't want to skip. So I go there, but I'm not fully invested with my heart, right?
Yeah.
And then sometimes we got one-on-one lessons where people wouldn't show up, and he just destroyed me because I was good at what I did. Because of breakdance and stuff, I was conditioned, you know, so I had good endurance and stuff like that and body control from dance, right? Mm-hmm. So he thought I'm a really good student. But I was like, okay, I can pick this up pretty fast, but I'm not enjoying the process at all, right? So more and more that came to surface. So I was able to do what they were telling me, blocking, throwing and stuff like that, all the moves and how to roll out of a throw and stuff like that. But there's always this thing nagging, like, you don't enjoy this, you know? Yeah. So at some point, I basically went to my shifu and said, like, hey, I decided I'm gonna stop. Kung Fu. And he said, why? You're so good. And I'm like, I said, like, it's not about if I'm good or not. It's more about, can I invest like my whole heart into this?
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm not honest to you, because I feel currently it's like a burden for me to come to class. It has nothing to do with how you teach. It's just how I feel about combat.
Yeah.
It's just not for me, right?
Yeah.
I thought it could be, but I realized, now I tried it, that it is not.
Yeah.
My heart is in dance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he respected that. And that's how I stopped, right? But so there, I didn't get even to that obsessive learning behavior. With breakdance, I did, but only to a certain degree. So I feel like passion comes in like different levels, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with animation and painting, the level is off the roof for me,
yeah.
You know, where it never dies, the flame never dies. I want to learn more and more and more. And that was since childhood, right? Since we created those special effects with those, you know, photos and stuff. So that's something that is like always dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So I always have endless fuel to push into that. For breakdance, because I was at an age where, you know, now I'm like 42, right? So I still try, but I have to be a bit more careful, because breakdance is very physical. You know, it's for a reason it's called breakdance, you know? Like it's literally, I had some injuries through that as well, you know? So, and you don't recover as fast anymore, you know? So, try to do it still, but not seriously. And I got to a point, my goal for breakdance was I want to be able to nail the windmill. That was like the one thing, I want to do this. And with flair, I tried it too, where you just swing the legs around and you're only on your hands, right?
Yeah.
But that was like, I realized instantly, this is too much strain on my wrists.
Yeah.
So I don't want to risk it. But windmill, I actually got to a point where I nailed it, right? So I don't know if I can do it now, because breakdance is like, it's not like biking. If you lose a muscle, you can't physically do those moves anymore, you know?
Right,
so it's very disappointing if you take a 6 month break and all of a sudden the moves that you could do just don't work, because you know how the mechanics work, but you don't have the muscle to do it. Right? So, so for me, once I did the windmill and Dre saw it, you know, I did it in the morning and I think my best was like 8 rounds, you know, 8 propellers. I never was able to get into the windmill from a standing position.
Mm-hmm.
I always go from the ground position and rotate into it, you know.
Yeah.
But that was good enough for me, where I felt like, hey, I was able to master this, you know, and that felt like an impossible move to do when I started. Right?
Yeah.
So, and Miles, my teacher, said, like, how many times do you practice a day right now? And I'm like, 3 times. He said, that's not enough. Like, if you want to learn the windmill, you have to do at least 5 times a week, at least, right? Give it at least half an hour, right?
Mm-hmm.
But your body needs to learn this. Like, 3 days, you can't figure out the body mechanics. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. So 5 days a week, I would practice, sometimes on the weekends as well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's how I nailed it. Right. So that's where the obsessive practice came in. You know, same with handstands. Handstands I practice every day and I was able to do it eventually. Right. And to me, I realized early on is to acquire skill, you need to put the time into it.
Yeah.
You need to practice. You will never get stuff for free. Right.
Yeah.
So you need to work to get skill. And you can only put in work if you have passion for it. Because if you're not fully invested in it, it will block you from learning. And if it blocks you from learning, you don't experience success enough. And then you get more failures, and then that might depress you, and that might make you stop, right?
Yeah.
In my case, it's more like, you know, like with Kung Fu, I lost interest. So it was not like I reached a physical barrier.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't feel the passion, so I stopped, because I knew that this is useless to go into this if I don't really want it. You know?
Yeah.
I only wanted like Neo style, I know Kung Fu, you know, and that doesn't work that way, right? So with breakdance, I was willing to do that, to go that mile, and I managed to do this, right? And now for animation and painting, that sensation is supercharged, right?
Yeah.
Like, I love the process so much that there's no way I want to stop, regardless how much I fail, right? And one technique I use that works really well is, you know, there's ways to practice, you know, and sometimes you have to practice for hours, for example, piano or gymnasts. You have to like spend a lot of hours. I spend a lot of hours into breakdance. Learning how to paint is almost like learning how to write, right? Like it's much faster, because you don't have to physically train your body. You train your brain to understand.
Yeah.
So same animation takes hours actually, but painting, there's a good thing you can do is that you can do short training sessions, right?
Yeah.
So short training sessions are much easier to investment than long sessions. Like learning animation takes a lot of dedication and time. Learning how to draw and paint, if you draw every day for half an hour, you will get better, right? But you have to do it every day, right? So what I did early on in 2003, I actually started painting way late in the game. So because I knew I wanted to become an animator. So coming back actually after high school, I went to a 3D animation school. And that's where I basically knew Pixar, DreamWorks, or Disney is where I'm going to infinity and beyond, right?
Yeah.
So that's like that's where I'm going to be. There was like no question. So I spent hours on end in learning animation. Started with 2D animation in school. It was a 3-year program, and then Maya, then XSI, Software Mesh XSI, 3D Studio Max, and Lightwave, right? So those are the software packages we learned at school. Basically, there was the only 3D animation school specialized on 3D animation in Germany, and it was a private school too. And so it was fairly expensive. It was $40,000 for 3 years, which sounds dead cheap here in the States, right? Because you pay that even for a term. But in Germany, that was unheard of because Germany is mostly state universities, so it's free, right?
Yeah.
So just to segue a little bit to gain that money, because I wanted it so bad, but I knew that my parents said like, oh, hell no, we can't support you with that. But your grandma has some savings for you, you know, and she was deceased and she had some college savings, and that paid like, I think 3/4 of what I needed, right? Which was like really great. And they said like, hey, cost of living, you know, we pay for you, you know, but you still have to come up with like $10,000-$15,000, right? And that was like, I had like $100 on my account, you know, as a...
And I know you started a company.
Yes!
Research.
Nice! So yeah, so that comes actually to back to your question about dedication, right? Because I wanted it so bad. So I'm like, I can't get this right now. So what actions can I take to get there? Okay, I need $15,000. How do I gain this, right? I am straight out of high school, so I don't know how to come up with money. I haven't studied anything. I knew I want to learn animation, so this is my next goal. This is my immediate goal, right? So how do I get there? I need money. How do I get money? Let's start a company, right? So with my friend, a friend of mine that I knew from dance, one thing I left out in dancing is I was also dancing rock and roll for 3 years.
Nice.
So it's like a couples dance, right?
Yeah.
And it's very like athletic too, you know. So
is it like a swing or?
Almost, yeah. Yeah, it's more higher kicks than swing though, you know, but very similar. It's very similar kind of like movements and stuff like that. Just the kicks are much higher, you know.
Yeah.
And then acrobatics are more higher as well than swing dancing. Mm-hmm. Swing looks more like really fun dance versus like rock and roll is a little bit more acrobatic, right?
Nice.
So it's a mixture between swing and gymnasts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I was doing that, and there was a guy that I met there who I became really close friends with, and he was like this super smart hardware engineer as well, you know. So he would build his little robotics, buying chipsets and stuff like that. And we started a company because he liked what I did, and we're like, hey, we can do web design together, you know, and web design gets like a lot of money, you know. So we started, and then let's start with selling computer hardware, and then we dive into like web design later. And then we started building custom computers for people, and quickly realized that we're only making like $40 a month from that. So it's like, it was like, come on, you know, per sale, we make like 40 extra bucks. And it was like, this is not scalable.
Yeah.
So also through the rock and roll club, he talked to someone whose friend had a company that he just started. It was an investment funds company.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they wanted to create like the stock marketplace, easy to buy, like this stock platform. And I didn't know anything about, right? And then he said, hey, they need a PHP programmer. Can Goro do this? Because like Florian, my business partner, he had like, he was still studying, I think, and he didn't have time. So, and he's like, Goro, this is our opportunity. You know? And I'm like, I don't know PHP. He said, I can teach you a bit. And, you know, this is similar to HTML. And HTML, you know, so you can learn this there. And I'm just saying, oh, I need the money. Okay, let's do it. So then I started, like, at this investment funds company, coding, like, PHP investment funds forms.
Yeah.
So, like, how you can type in, like strings into a form and stuff like that. This is a checkbox, and I wrote all the functions, you know, and it was, like, so hard for me because I'm not a coder, you know? And, like, another thing I don't have passion for, but I want to be able to do.
Right.
Like, so I have my JavaScript and HTML books. I had those. But then after I learned, like, for a day, I'm just like, screw this. I don't want to do this. Right? So, but then there was my job. So I had to, like, really do this. And
yeah.
I'm just like, I'm miserable, but I'm making money. Right. So I think we made, like, I think we made $24,000 in a year, which was, like, a lot for
yeah.
us, you know? And, but then while I was there, they talked to me, like, yeah, you also know how to graphic design, right? And I'm like, well, I didn't go to school. I think I have a good sense for graphics, you know? And then they bought me a Photoshop license, right?
Nice.
And then basically there I started redesigning some icons on the website that turned into, like, revamping the whole website, you know? And then that turned into, like, creating conference booths. Right,
mm-hmm.
And all the prints on the sides, banners, and even logos of their they created, like, a new brand logo, and they needed a new brand logo, and they're like, Goro, we have, like, this company that does it for us, but you can do this. And
yeah.
I'm like, crazy. So, and that's when I had to also have my calls with, like, print companies and stuff, talking
yeah.
about, like, Pantone codes and CMYK
yeah.
and all that stuff. And I was a very introvert guy. Right, like, I was, like, very, like, I didn't want to talk on phones with strangers. I didn't want to get introduced
me
to
too,
strangers.
Me too.
So that was terrifying for me when they said, just call the company. Just call them now. And then the boss is in there. And I just say, now, can I finish this? Do it just now. Man, I'm here. I can also answer questions. And I'm just like, now I'm on the spot. And I'm just like, oh, this is Goro Fujita from NetPhone 24. You know, I have a question about this. And I'm just like, oh, this is, like, horrible. I want to get out of here, right? But then they gave me more and more, like, visual tasks, even
mm-hmm.
if it was an investment funds company. And then they needed, like, a hardcore PHP coder. And I knew my high school friend, Johannes Kopf, who was like my brother in music. He was in coding, so he was in the computer class in high school, and he would be, like, the top all the time without really practicing or learning, because he knew everything about coding, right?
Yeah.
Fun fact, he works at Meta with me together, like,
nice.
At the same company. It's crazy, right? Like, the same high school in Germany, and then
uh-huh.
we actually built video games together early on, like, the very small ones.
Uh-huh.
And then now, like, 20 years later, we're, like, at the same company again, you know, in a different country. So that's another interesting coincidence, or is it? But, you know, but yeah. So we hired him, and he
mm-hmm.
just took over all the coding and stuff like that, and I was able to dedicate myself completely towards graphics. So after that year, I had the 15,000, right, to cover. So I basically told my business partner, hey, I have to jump ship, right? And he said, yeah, I knew this is, like, your objective. You know, I'm
mm-hmm.
gonna take this company further. I think it still exists, actually. So
yeah.
he's still running it as a consulting firm and stuff. And then, yeah, that's when I started at the German Film School for Digital Production. That was the full name of the school in Elstal near Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I started back in 2022. I was 25 years old at that time.
2002, you said
2022. Oh, yeah, 2002. Yeah, 2022 is, like, this year. Yeah, I just started. Sophomore year, a junior year. No, yeah, 20. Yeah, 2002. Yeah, I'm so used to saying 20, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a 3 years program. I learned how to animate in 2D and 3D, you know, and my objective. So that was my big objective. Now I had that checked, right?
Yeah.
Next objective, Pixar, right? So everybody said, you're crazy, man. Like, how do you even get there? And I'm like, well, you know, of course it requires a lot of dedication and practice, but do never forget the people that are there,
yeah.
like Victor Navon.
Mm-hmm.
They started somewhere. I'm starting somewhere.
Yeah.
I think it's possible, right? So that's when I started like really dedicating myself to animation. But in the third year, 2004, I would say, is when I met Stefan Strolting. He was 2 years below me, and he was a guy who painted in Photoshop. He was really good, right? Mm-hmm. A concept artist. And I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. And like, well, how did you do this? And he said, I use this Wacom tablet. And I'm like, it's a tablet. I paint with a mouse, you know, it's easier. And he's like, are you freaking kidding me? No, the tablet is way better. And he said, trust me on this.
Yeah.
Like, really learn how to use the tablet. And because we had tablets at the school, it was a pretty modern school. It was still the beige colored ones, the Wacoms. And then that's when I painted something and you know, forced myself to use the Wacom tablet. And I guess you have more control than a mouse.
Yeah.
And then I was like showing my painting to Stefan, you know, I was kind of proud of it. And I'm like, hey, so here is my painting. Can you give me some feedback? And he said, where do I start? And he's like, so what's your objective? And I'm like, I want to be able to paint like you, you know, like I want to be able to utilize this in my arsenal of creation, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to learn how to paint. And he's like, okay, honest or can I be honest? And he's, I mean, hit me. Like, I need this. And he's like, okay, to be honest, I don't know where to start because you're pretty much doing everything wrong. Right? So you don't have any foundations. So
mm-hmm.
you don't know how to use light and color. You don't know much about composition. You know, you don't know how to draw, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I thought I could draw. I thought I'm good at composition because I had a natural sense for it. But when you take it to a professional level, it was still very beginner level, right? And he's like, and storytelling, next, like, what is this? What are you trying to say with this image? Just this female monk sitting on this rock in front of a waterfall. But how does this environment relate to the character? And I'm just like, oh, shit. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, okay, I accept your critique. Tell me, what am I supposed to do? And he's like, you need to practice, man. He's like, this is like, you need to practice. I can't even mentor you if you're at this level right now, right? So basically he taught me half an hour a day,
mm-hmm.
you know, learn from life or reference images. If your objective is to learn how to paint light and color, which it was,
mm-hmm.
try to just look at the pictures and repaint them without picking the colors from the photo. So try to understand why the shirt looks blue, although it's white, why it has a purple tint in it,
mm-hmm.
how are the local colors being influenced by light, right? And I'm like, okay, interesting. So that's when I started my speed painting journey, back in March 2004,
mm-hmm.
Where I started daily paintings for at least a year, I think. Mm-hmm. I got to like 365 days, consecutive days. But basically, I started doing half an hour a day, and half an hour is very important. So an hour is fine,
mm-hmm.
but half an hour to an hour, but not longer. And the reason is because if you spend longer on a painting, you start to cover up your mistakes.
Yeah.
If you stop where you cannot, at a time where you can't have time to fix your mistakes, then you expose your mistakes so you can learn from them, right?
Yeah.
So you fail quickly in mm-hmm. short increments,
mm-hmm.
and then you can fix your mistakes, right? So I had like this hourglass, which was exactly 30 minutes. So I put it in and then I draw, right? And then I stop, regardless how shitty the image looked, I stop
mm-hmm.
and save it and number it consecutively, right? So I've been doing this, and after 60 days I hit my first milestone where I drew something, and then I didn't bother Stefan for the first month, right? But then, you know, every now and then I get critiques from him. He's like, no, go back, you have to work mm-hmm. more, right? And then the images that I painted from reference were really good because
mm-hmm.
You know, I get the colors fairly right. But then whenever I do something from imagination, it looks like garbage, right?
Yeah.
So after painting 60, I think it was around that, I painted and showed it to Stefan. And he looked at me and he said, did you use the reference? And I'm like, I didn't. And he's like, interesting. I'm like, now I can start mentoring you because now I can actually see your mistakes. It's not all wrong. You're doing actually a lot of things right? Okay. So that's when I had my 15-minute sessions, like, you know, on a daily basis. He would when I do reference, I wouldn't bother him, but every time I do something personal, I would just sit in 15 minutes with him. He does paint overs for me and stuff, you know. And then that's how I learned. And then I ended up doing this for a long time. It's hard to be consecutive. So I have to admit, after the first year, I did miss like a week or two sometimes, right?
Yeah.
But I always found my way back. Mm-hmm. And the reason is when I started, so I was always dedicated to do it every day until to a point where I felt comfortable. Hey, I reached a level where I can relax a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when I was like already fairly good at painting, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's when I let loose a little bit, but then I picked it up again because I'm like, okay, I'm recharging a little bit, and then now I'm gonna go to the next level, right?
Yeah.
And then I would then do another 300 days consecutively and stuff like that, right? So the consecutive practice is extremely important because you constantly have to think about your mistakes. You constantly get faced with failures, right? But then you also have an opportunity to fix them the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So you do these micro steps that you really don't notice you're improving, but then by numbering the paintings consecutively, after 30 days, if you look back to painting one, you do see a difference. If after like 300 days and you look at painting 60, you see a huge difference. While you do this, you don't notice because you're constantly working, right? So that's when I also got exposed to internet, like sharing. So I was part of this underground forum called Sijun, which was a very popular back then among artists. Craig Mullins, the master of digital art, he was posting there, Spooch Demon, that was his name. And a lot of friends, now friends, used to post then that I looked up to, you know, which is like really cool. And then, of course, there was CG Talk as well, right? So and CG Talk was more 3D oriented, but I was also in the speed painting forum and stuff like that. Really like, you know, putting all my art out there.
Yeah.
So that's how a lot of my friends that I know now that are art directors and production designers and senior people, they know me from back then. And because they've seen my dedication, when I ask them for advice down the line or for a recommendation letter, right, for my green card and stuff like that, or for my visa, it wasn't a question for them to help me because they knew who I was. They knew that I was serious about it, right? Because I painted every single day and they actually seen my progression. So they knew this guy is dedicated. He might not be good right now, but he wants to be good, right? So by the time I got the respect, that's when I started working professionally as an artist, right? So that was like also important to showcase your art. Regardless if it's bad, if you're learning, it's beneficial if you show it. Unfortunately, forums and stuff are not as popular anymore, and now it's all about Instagram and stuff. But by getting comments or not getting comments, it's kind of a good benchmark, right? Like where you're at. Because when I came out of high school, I thought I was the shit. You know? But I wasn't at all, right? And then I got punched in the face in college because there was a bunch of people better than me, you know? And I'm like, oh, you know, I actually have to work, right? And then I met Stefan and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know anything, right? And then I still feel like that, but it humbled me, right? Because it's like, it's not it, you know? Everybody tries to be the best version of themselves, but you have to like work on it, right? And yeah, so that's when I did the daily paintings and still do. Now I call them the daily quillustrations. And I'm closing in to taking over my painting number. So I stopped painting daily at 1,500. So I did 1,500 paintings. And today, before this call, I was actually working on a daily quillustration now in VR, which is my 1,302nd painting, right?
Nice.
So I'm getting close, you know. This year, do I reach it this year? No, I don't think there's so many days left. But next year, I will basically surpass the 2D paintings. Right?
I think, like all that you're saying with your learning journey, that's why, so like similar to you, I didn't find 3D animation as a career until my senior year of high school. But also, I'm pet, like, I like to, I remember I was, I met a father last weekend at a conference, and he was saying how his daughter was interested in, like, animation and stuff like that. And something that, from personal experience of tutoring a guy, trying to get kids to, like, at least as a hobby, do, like, animation, or if they, like, oh, I play video games, I want to make video games. But then I remember I tutored a guy, and he ended up going to college to study animation, and then that's when he realized he didn't want to make video games. And I'm like, oh man, you like trying to talk to parents, like, you can save a lot of money if you try to get them to do it now and then realize now that they don't actually want to do it. Because I feel like the video game thing is kind of similar to like the NBA, where like people think because they play basketball that they want to be in the NBA, but then you realize that you either don't have the work ethic, or you just don't actually want to work that, like, you don't want to be in the NBA. So I feel like before parents spend money on college, like, there's free resources. Try to get your child to do it now,
that's
so
the,
they can see now that they don't actually want to, they just want to play video games.
So the huge advantage of social media now is that resources are all out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I was growing up, it was literally VHS, learning Michael Jackson dance move from a VHS. Learning Maya, that was a trip, you know, to, like, there was no YouTube. Right, so I knew a guy who knew a guy, right? So that's also how I got Maya, because Maya was only enterprise licenses, you know. How do I get to Maya, right? And then I knew a guy at, who studied at the art school in Germany, and then, who happens to be the brother of Johannes, who is the coder, you know. That is, it's crazy. And then basically his name is Robert, and basically he was kind of like short-term my mentor for Maya, because he was like one of the only people that I knew that actually used Maya, you know. But that was my Maya release 2. That was before Paint Effects came out, right? So it's like old school, right? And I think that was right after it was like it changed from Alias Power Animator to Maya, you know. So yeah, so back then, like, it was my dedication that led the way. But these days, Gen X kids are jaded, right? Because they have everything available to them, you know. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, in Germany, it's still cheap to go to school, but here in US, it's a risk, right? Like, if you spend so much money in Germany, the good thing is financially, it's not really a risk, you know. It's like, if you drop out and you find something else, then do it, you know, like, you just find a way to live. But here you have student debts and stuff, right? So yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's a lot of stuff you can learn from, like, you can be self-taught, you know, through YouTube. It really doesn't matter where you come from, and what matters is what you can do, right? So if you're like super dedicated, you don't really need to go to school, right? And especially in these days, you can learn everything online. However, what I do say about school, because people ask me, like, do I have to go to a school to be good? I say, no, you don't. If you have dedication and the passion to really, and the discipline to learn, you don't. But what a school does is it puts you in a very competitive environment and gives you tasks that you wouldn't give to yourself maybe otherwise. And it might open up doors to, like, to areas that you have never dreamt of going towards, right? And that happened to me multiple times, actually, because I learned 3D, right? But if I didn't go to college, I wouldn't have met Stefan. So I might have never gotten to DreamWorks to do the visual development, right? So all those things, like, that's what school does. It creates network and an environment that you can thrive in, right? And if you're alone, you could still get networked through Discord or, like, through art forums and stuff, but it's different, right? And so in that sense, I think school is valuable. But one important thing that I always tell my students is that the school is not going to make you a good artist. It's you. So when we had open doors in our school, it was like $40,000 school in Germany. That sounds outrageously expensive, right? So we had the open door. And then, did you say an open door? It's like an open day when people can come and visit the school. Like, I don't know how you call it. In German, you call it open door. That's why I directly translated. But like this open, like,
the, if, Just like a college tour? Or...
Yes, exactly. Where people can come. It's a dedicated day, though, where parents can come and talk to the students, you know. And then there was a dad, a father, that came to me and he's like, hey, so if I spend my money, is he guaranteed to have a job after this? And I'm like, no, absolutely not. If your son comes here and doesn't give a shit and doesn't work, obviously he doesn't have a job after that. But if he comes here, it's really dedicated and works really hard, 100% he will get a job. And he's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. You know, so you know, like that's like this. People think they can get skill for free, you know?
Yeah.
But the school can only offer an environment where you can thrive, but you have to be responsible to thrive, right? like if you, and we had people that just like lean back and not doing anything, they just smoke all day, you know, and they don't help their teammates, and they weren't as successful after that, you know? And but that's obvious, right?
Yeah.
So I do say, like, you know, I heard from a Blue Sky animator that he was a lifeguard before, you know, and then became an animator. So all of those stories exist, right?
Yeah.
And Dre's story is inspiring, you know, growing up in Marysville, you know, and, or Tyree, you know, I saw you were, like, we were actually blog friends. Like,
nice.
I never met Tyree, but we had a lot of, like, conversations through Blogger back then, you know, and I saw on your channel that you had him as a guest. And I was, oh, Reed, that's awesome, right? And he had a very different past from me, you know, so has Dre, but we ended up in the same industry, right? So it really comes down to you, dedication. So it's also not about, like, I want to be like XYZ. You have to be the best version you can be, right? And only that way you can make yourself unique and on par with other industry giants, right? So so practice is key. It sounds simpler than it's done, like, easier said than done, right? Because practice, if you don't love the process,
right,
you're not gonna get good at it.
And that's what I'm trying to get to. Like, well, first I want to mention, like, because of my platform, I have, like, people who just graduated from college reach out to me and, like, show me their work, and I'm like, just spent 4 years to come out with work that looks like that. I don't tell them that, but that's my inside thought. And I'm like, ooh, you have a long way to go.
Yeah.
And then for me, my personal college experience of, like, for the first 2 years, I kind of, like, you know, did my assignments. And this was for all my classes, not just for my animation classes. But then my second 2 years, I was like, I want to, like, do all my projects. I did all my projects about race and gender, because, like, I would be part of, like, the Black Awareness Coordinating Committee, and we have all these events where we want to talk about race with, like, white people, and they would never come. So I'm just like, I want to know what white people think. And so they're in my class and they have to participate, so let me do all my projects on race so I know what they think. And so my junior year and senior year, I, like, very concentrated, like, all my projects, whether it was, like, visual anthropology or a psychology, like, social science class, or my animation classes, I would concentrate on race, because I'm like, I really want to know what they think. And I'm not trying to, like, bait anybody. I just want to, like, they don't come to our events. So I'm like, let me learn what they think, which some of it was really dumb. But, like, at least I know that now. And so I feel like taking your learning into your own hands, like, I did it in a different way, but, like, even with art, like, trying to figure out your own style, or like following what your professor is telling you to do, but then taking it further, not doing the bare minimum.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, that's the thing, right? You have to love the process, and art is about the process, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, I exactly relate to you with, like, when you do portfolio reviews or animation demo reel reviews. I still do animation reviews as well, because I'm not, like, the greatest animator, but I know what I'm talking about. I've been in the industry, right? So I can comment on stuff, you know, like, from an objective or subjective point of view, but I can use my experience to give feedback. But I don't sugarcoat things, right?
Yeah.
So I see a lot of, like, fellow artists that just say, like, yeah, that's awesome, you will get to your goal one day, you know?
Yeah.
But no, I'm not like that, right? Like, I'm known as being savage, you know? So, like, it was funny, I was at CTN, I think that was 2018, I always do some portfolio reviews at my booth as well, right? And then one guy came from like I get feedback, right? And then but I'm not like evil or something. I'm just like saying how it is, right? And then I was like, and who else did your portfolio review? And he said Pascal Campion. And I'm like, oh, he's pretty savage, right? And he said, well, you're not bad either. Because Pascal is also very like very direct, you know.
Yeah.
But what I say is, you know, like I look at the stuff, for example, our portfolios, and I say like, hey. So they're like, yeah, I don't find a job. Like I applied to like 50 companies and they don't even reply. And I'm like, okay, looking at your portfolio, I understand why, right? Because you're not ready. That's simply said. But it doesn't mean you can't be ready, right? Mm-hmm. It means you have to put more time into it. They say, yeah, but I'm already graduating. I'm like, it doesn't matter because graduating doesn't mean you're good. You
right.
So I said, like, you have to practice fundamentals, and I point stuff out, you know, and I talk to them about the daily practice, you know, and really target your weaknesses, you know, because I can see you can draw, but you have no idea about how to use light and color. Mm-hmm. And I think that's lacking, and that's actually overpowering your lack of experience. It's overpowering your experience, actually.
Yeah.
So that's ending up hurting you. And they're like, yeah, but I need money, so I need a job. And I'm like, yeah, so be it. Like, find a job. And she said, yeah, but that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm like, no, you're trying to find an art job.
Right.
Find any job, right? He said, well, should I be waiting tables or what? And I'm like, yes, why not, right? I'm like, I didn't, like, computer hardware sales to get to where I want to be, mm-hmm. right? So sometimes you have to pave your own way. If there's a brick wall, try to find a way around it, right? So life is not as easy. If it was that easy, everybody would have a job.
Yeah.
What I'm telling you right now, would I hire you? Absolutely not, right? And I'm telling you straight up, just because it's not that I don't like you, it's just not skilled enough. But if you were skilled, I might hire you, right? So that's how simple it is. And they're like, oh, okay, you know. And you know, like, sometimes I did make people cry sometimes, and I'm like, hey, you know, like, this is not meant to be, like, I'm not bashing you or anything.
Right.
I just don't want you, like, sugarcoat your work and let you leave with a wrong impression, because the reason why you don't get calls is just simply because you're not skilled enough. But it never means that you will never be skilled enough.
Right.
It's just I put more work into it and it will happen. Because do you think I got landed an animation job right away? No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Do you think I thought like I could be a visual development artist? That wasn't even an option for me. I slid into that, right?
Right.
Which is a good segue into DreamWorks, because